Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your host, Dylan Conroy, back with another edition of the Ad Podcast. And super exciting today. We've got Derek Osgood, the CEO of Ignition. And Derek has a really exciting background as a traditional brand marketer at companies like PlayStation, and most recently involved in the more SaaS startup B2B space. And Derek, you know, the first thing I wanted to kick off with is I'm always excited to talk to founders about the idea that, you know, at some point along your journey, you identified this problem that was haunting you enough to where you wanted to become a founder yourself and launch a solution. So can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what was that moment or what was that problem that was kind of haunting you as a product marketer that made you think it was a big enough of an issue where you needed to launch your own company, your own solution to tackle it? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure thing. So I mean, basically, you know, as a product marketer, like a big part of what my role has been historically has been, you know, figuring out like how you bring new things to market, whether those are, you know, products, features, campaigns, events, et cetera. And, you know, I think like I've seen this at every single company that I've been at, you know, there's basically this like widening gulf these days between product teams and then, you know, the marketing and sales teams that are responsible for actually selling, you know, the things that are getting built. And that, you know, widening gulf, like it has real material impacts on revenue and outcomes for companies. And, you know, like you're, when you end up like launching things ineffectively, you end up with, you know, really, you leave significant amounts of revenue opportunity on the table because there's upsell and cross-sell opportunities that you're not capturing. You end up spending tons and tons of money on the launch itself and the build process that ends up kind of getting wasted. And on top of that, you know, like it basically just creates frustration and misalignment internally in the company. And so, you know, I've tried to build solutions for this internally, you know, at every company that I've been at, from PlayStation to Rippling to all these other companies that I've worked for. And essentially, you know, like most companies, they try and stitch all this stuff together through a hodgepodge of like docs and spreadsheets. And then they have, and then all the actual work itself is happening separately in point solutions for competitive intelligence, for research. They may have some road mapping tools for the product team, but, you know, they're basically this disconnection of all the critical context and, you know, what's going on with the go-to-market process itself that creates really poor visibility in the company. And like, if you look at the stats, you know, like McKinsey did some research a couple of years ago. They looked at, you know, launch processes for hundreds of different companies. And, you know, they basically found that like the number one thing that correlates with whether or not launches are successful or failures boils down to, you know, communication and coordination, whether those companies have a repeatable process. And so getting the transparency problem solved is incredibly critical. And basically, you know, like when you're stitching it together in this hodgepodge of tools, it's just incredibly hard to get cross-functional teams a clear picture of what's actually going on with that launch, how it's working. And so, you know, basically I got tired of kind of hacking this together in a whole bunch of tools myself. And, you know, I had built a pretty good process with a lot of automation baked into it around both the communication and research collection, you know, when I was building this prop function out at Rippling, and, you know, basically just decided to productize it.
That's awesome, man. I read on your website an interesting statistic that over 89% of product launches fail. That seems like a pretty daunting statistic. Could you take us through what you feel are some of the key reasons for such a high degree of failure among some of these launches?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of statistics out there around this. And, you know, like it ranges from like 40% up to 89%. But I think generally most of them fail. And like the definition of failure here is basically they fail to meet the revenue targets that are set for them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think like I mentioned, you know, there's a big McKinsey study that was done like 2 years ago. They basically looked across range of startups, big companies, also looking across a range of industries in tech, CPG, entertainment. And, you know, I think the three things that like really got highlighted as having very high correlation with launch failure and like, you know, it was none of the things that you would normally expect, like how much money did they spend on it? How big is their team? You know, like how effective was the product that they built? The three things that like really contributed to whether or not launches succeed or fail was one, whether or not that company actually has a repeatable go-to-market process. Two, whether or not that company how effectively that company utilized research in their process, both competitor and customer research. And then how, and then the third one was how effectively that company communicated around the launch process. And the real, you know, like if you kind of boil all that stuff down, mostly it comes down to alignment, right? You know, like you have all these cross-functional teams, you have to motivate to promote the launch. They also have to be effective at doing it. So go to market, like a lot of people think of it as kind of a project where it's like, oh, you have this checklist, things that you got to get done. But it's really like an active enablement exercise, because sales can't sell the thing if they don't know how to talk about it, if they don't even know that it's coming down the pipe. The PR team can't go get press around it if they don't understand what the message is, if they don't have visibility into when things are happening. And your support team isn't going to be able to answer questions if they don't know where to access kind of critical product documentation. And so like all of this motion is all about like pushing context out to internal teams from the kind of core teams that are doing a lot of the planning, which tends to be like product and product marketing. And so, you know, most of this breaks down because companies haven't operationalized that process yet. A lot of times they haven't even hired product marketing. They haven't even invested in the function yet. But you know, when you don't actually have a process for this stuff, nobody knows how to engage with the process itself. Nobody knows what's happening. Nobody knows how to talk about the things that are happening. And so, you know, most of it just boils down to like whether or not the company is actually invested in building repeatability into this.
Yeah, I think I read in a Forbes article, you mentioned that you had a really provocative quote that it's all too common for companies to build things that nobody want. Intuition is often wrong, or tell stories that lack real insight into consumer problems, and thus doesn't really resonate. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, more of like where does that disconnect come from? Is it just you know, product leaders thinking of a solution that they haven't quite, you know, road tested with the sales team or got out there and talked to customers about, or where does that, you know, lack of connectivity happen?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's like just no systems in place for actually collecting intel back from the market. So, you know, sales and if you talk about like just the sales and product relationship, oftentimes there's a fairly combative relationship between sales and product. It's like sales is on calls with customers and customers are telling them they need a thing, they need a feature, they need a product. And sales tries to go relay that back to product, and sales doesn't really have any way to like quantify the impact of what that thing is. And, you know, like there's a lot of boy who cried wolf where, you know, sales teams are like constantly asking for things. And if those deals don't close, then, you know, they lose trust with product. But at the same time, like product on the other hand is constantly like wondering why sales isn't selling the things that they built. And a lot of times, you know, it's just misalignment between those two teams. So, I mean, like one of the things that we've done with Ignition is that we've actually productized that motion so that, you know, we're auto extracting key feature ideas that are blocking deals from sales conversations, quantifying, you know, the revenue impact of building them based on CRM data. Wow. And then when things ship, like notifying sales reps and saying, hey, you know, like this feature just got built that you were asking for, here's the couple of deals that you should go close. But, you know, like ultimately, I think it's just poor communication between product and sales and like, you know, a tense relationship that doesn't have any again, it like boils down to visibility and tooling. It's like ends up being a he said, she said type of conversation where, you know, like sales is like, hey, I told you we should build this and you didn't build it and this deal didn't close. And then it's unclear whether or not that deal didn't close because the thing didn't get built or because, you know, the communication back from product to get sales to go sell it like didn't happen. And so, you know, I think a lot of it's just companies, they don't invest, like, you know, companies say that they invest in research and they say that they invest in collecting feedback from the market, but a lot of them don't. A lot of them actually, you know, it is just product teams building off of intuition and, you know, like they're pretty buried in their own internal processes and product teams are pulled in a lot of different directions by their exec teams as well. So, you know, oftentimes the thing that drives roadmaps is not what the actual market need is. It's like what some specific exec's initiative is within the company and like them just being the loudest voice in the room and saying, hey, product, you need to go build this. So yeah.
No, that's interesting. And then I think I read another quote from you where you talked about sometimes the greatest marketing is actually how great the product itself is. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about how, you know, sometimes when you have a product that just kind of stands alone on some of the features and benefits, that that becomes the best kind of marketing, whether it's word of mouth or things that you can do in channel?
Well, I think there's two kind of like ways to break that down. So like fundamentally, I don't believe products sell themselves. So like there's a lot of people who take the approach where they're like, hey, you know, like if you build a great product, people will find it, people will come and, you know, they'll talk about it and you'll grow just organically. That doesn't happen. It's not reality. So, you know, I think that when I'm saying that the best marketing is the product, usually it's more about just how you're delivering value. And like, you know, if you can delight a customer who comes in and they have just an incredible experience with the product, that person is much, much more likely to become an advocate and be able to go promote, and like they'll go promote you through word of mouth, they'll publish you on social media, they'll talk about you, you know, externally. And so, you know, delivering great experiences is first and foremost the most impactful thing you can do to grow. But there's also like the second component to that, which is, you know, sometimes the best marketing is how the product markets itself, which is often, you know, like how you've baked virality, like if you're a tech product, like how you've baked virality into the experience, or if you're a physical product, you can even bake virality into the experience there. Like if you think about, you know, CPG products, it's like Lime scooters and Bird scooters, like those things were inherently viral because they were branded. And so everybody saw them, you know, everybody saw all these people suddenly scootering around in these cities. And they were like, hey, like all these people are on this Lime scooter. What's that Lime scooter thing? And then they went and sought it out. So, you know, I think virality is a concept that like is grounded in how you've built and packaged the product. And that applies whether you're talking about tech companies or whether you're talking about physical goods.
Yeah, no, I love that. In an interview recently, you talked a little bit about your own product launch that you guys just had. And you mentioned that some external influencers or word of mouth partners actually drove twice the amount of inbound leads than some of your owned and operated channels did from a marketing perspective. Can you talk just a little bit generally about how the B2B space is changing and that influencer marketing has become a bigger part of the mix and how you've seen that show up in your own marketing?
Yeah, I mean, like we work with a bunch of, you know, kind of micro influencers. Some of them are just like fans of Ignition and they found us through their own kind of organic outreach. And, you know, they ended up like just wanting to go promote us when we did our launch, and we've established relationships with them, you know, over time where, you know, they are just actively promoting us because they like the product. And so that's another example of like where, you know, like solving a real problem for a group of people and like finding the right voices in that community can drive, you know, pretty significant growth. And, you know, I think I'm always a big believer that, you know, having somebody like whisper your name from the top of the mountaintop is a lot more impactful than you shouting your name from the top of the mountaintop. And so, you know, like using third party influencers, whether those are partnerships that you've established, whether those are informal relationships, whether they're just fans, or whether those are even paid engagements, you know, like that, it's a pretty powerful lever to establish kind of third party credibility for your products and to help just get the story told to audiences that you probably otherwise wouldn't be able to access without, you know, spending on ads. And so we've worked with influencers in a variety of different ways. Like I said, you know, some of it through partnership, some of them we brought on as investors. And so they've been, you know, like incentivized to promote us just on their own. And then some of them through, you know, paid sponsorships as well. So, you know, we've kind of done the gamut there.
Are you excited about how LinkedIn is kind of pivoting, or at least I feel like leaning in more to trying to become a creator centric platform? Like a few of the innovations that we've seen over the last even just few months are the ability to do brand collaborations in LinkedIn, where you see, you know, brand in partnership with creator X. And then LinkedIn is also now allowing you to boost posts from individual pages versus company pages. How do you feel about, and then there's also been some criticism that LinkedIn is becoming too personal. It's like starting to like bleed over and feel a little bit like traditional social media and is not as professional maybe, or as it once was. Like, how do you feel about the general direction of LinkedIn kind of becoming a more creator-centric platform?
full transparency, I haven't really paid much attention to it. So I actually haven't noticed much of a shift there. But, you know, I think like by and large, when platforms try and be like, I feel like every platform messes this up. Every time they try and go and like become more creator centric, like what they're doing is they're just adding monetization levers, which is great for creators, but it also destroys the product and it ends up like hurting the authenticity of that creator experience. And, you know, I think the big downside is like you end up with purely pay to play engagements with creators, which like, you know, creators have to make money. And so I'm like very in favor of that. But I think it ends up like over time, just degrading the voices themselves. And then it becomes like a race to the bottom, you know, who can spend the most ad dollars. And it becomes just basically a new advertising platform. So I think, I have mixed feelings on it. You know, I haven't paid enough attention to the specific execution on it, to be able to like really have a well formulated opinion there, but, yeah, tough to say.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think, you know, authenticity of some of these networks of organic folks that you mentioned that you guys have been able to build relationships with is exciting and you know, I guess TBD to see how LinkedIn either is able to play in this space in a way that maintains that authenticity in those communities or if it becomes more about revenue, but pretty interesting for sure. So on another podcast recently, I heard you say an interesting statistic that product marketers should be listening to at least one customer call a day. I think maybe you walked that back to once a week in another quote, but seems like a lofty goal, but also like it's a very time consuming ask on a marketer to spend that much time with customers and with the sales team in market talking to customers. But can you talk about why you think that's important and why you have that opinion?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a lofty goal at all. I think it's like a very reasonable ask is that you sit on 30 minutes of a customer call a day. Yeah. It's like your job is to speak the customer's language and your job is to understand the customer's pain point. And your job is to understand, to be able to like translate that pain point to product roadmaps and to effective messaging. So like the only way that you're going to be good at that is if you actually are engaging with customers on a regular basis. So, you know, I think a lot of product marketers, like same as product teams do the same thing where, you know, they just kind of go into their little hidey hole and they have their set of assumptions that they formulated when they first joined the company and did their first intake, you know, and like first were digesting a lot of the like existing tribal knowledge in the company. And they come to their own conclusions and those conclusions are often wrong. Like, you know, I've seen it over and over again where, you know, you have product marketing teams or you have product teams that build the wrong things. They say the wrong things. They're just completely disconnected from what customers actually care about in the moment. And the only way that you stay close to that is if you talk to customers on a regular basis. So, you know, like it's a requirement on my, like for marketers that I hire that you are on customer calls at least once a week. I understand that there are kind of competing priorities that get in the way. So like, you know, maybe not every day, but like should be multiple times a week that you are either joining a customer call, you are watching a customer call that's been recorded, or you're picking up the phone and talking to a customer directly.
Yeah, that's cool. And I think you talked a little bit about how you guys are productizing some of those data feeds back into the marketing funnel, where if maybe you're not able to actually sit in on meetings and calls, that you have transcription software running in the background, pushing that into the product and serving it up to marketers in a way that's easily digestible for them, where they can kind of see that some of the mass aggregate data points across conversations that are happening across the sales team. Could you talk about a little bit of those insights and how the product works to serve up some of those data points to marketers to make them a little bit more actionable and a little bit more quantifiable?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, like what we do there, I mean, it's still no substitute for actually like talking to customers directly, but what we do is we basically, you know, like integrate into most of the customer conversation tools that you have, whether that's, you know, transcription tools like Gong for the sales team or support conversations in Intercommerce Zendesk, and we'll integrate in there. We aggregate all that data, and then we help kind of use AI to extract key takeaways, feature ideas, marketing messaging insights, and surface all of that stuff, you know, directly to our users. So basically, you know, what we're doing is we're taking large quantities of like qualitative customer conversation data and extracting what's important out of that automatically.
That's cool. In another interview, you talked about how being a product marketer yourself was a gateway for you wanting to start your own company. I thought that was insightful. Can you maybe elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if it was really like a gateway. Like, I always wanted to start my own company, and I think it was more just it prepared me really well for it. You know, again, because I think product marketers, more so than any other role within a company, have the best insight into what is like how all the different parts of a company operate. And so, you know, you're working constantly with product, with customer success, with sales, with marketing, with the e-staff, with finance. So product marketers, they have their fingers in a little bit of everything, like much, much more so than any other role. And so, you know, I think that you're just much, much more equipped to step into the role of a CEO, where you do need to understand like all of the different parts of the business and understand how they all kind of interoperate in a system. So I think it was really powerful as a tool to kind of prepare me in that way. But you know, I think there's obviously like certain skills that product marketers like still need to develop when jumping into starting a company. Like, for example, I came into, you know, starting my company, and I would say that my sales skills were definitely lacking. It was like first time selling. I had never really done that role. I understood the sales process. I understood kind of how to create effective messaging to support it, but the actual motion itself was new. So there's still always going to be things that you got to learn, but you know, I think it was a big inspiration and like prepared me pretty well for most of the role.
That's awesome. So another thing that you had mentioned as far as having an impact on that success rate of a product marketing launch is how well an organization can turn their frontline sales teams and their SDRs and their success teams into evangelists themselves, whether that's through traditional channels of going out there and talking about new features to customers, or empowering those teams to talk about things on social media. Can you talk a little bit about how organizations can be in a better position to kind of turn their own sales force or their own employees into influencers, and how can they kind of operationally give them the information that they need the best to kind of push out that messaging and support a successful launch?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when you talk about like the promotional channels that you have for a new thing, you know, companies forget too often that, you know, they have large numbers of employees who are the very best promoters for their product. They're the most incentivized to go promote it. They each have their own followings, you know, however small, on LinkedIn. They all are potential like avenues for you to go and promote the new thing that you just built. And on top of that, you know, like they are the ones who are going to be engaging with your customers the most. You know, like when you're talking about sales, like they're going to be having all of those one-to-one conversations with your prospects, both when they're outbounding as well as when those prospects come in for a conversation. So making sure that they are speaking the right language around the thing that you built, they are effectively articulating the value of it, they have all the like tools and assets they need in order to effectively promote it to those people, is one of the most impactful things you can do to drive kind of conversion through your funnel. And then same thing with support. It's like support are the ones who are engaging with all of your existing customers the most. They're the ones who have the best opportunity, the best equipped, and have the best opportunity to go directly to a customer and say, hey, customer, like you haven't used this new feature, you should be, because it's going to add XYZ things to your life. If they don't know how to talk about it, if they don't know that it exists, they're not going to be effective at doing that. So it's really critical to get those teams, you know, like enabled and on the same page around this stuff. And, you know, the process for actually getting information to them is mostly just about, you know, again, like taking an active enablement approach to the way that you're launching things and like actively pushing info to them at the places that they are living and making sure that you're giving them clear prioritization on like which things are most important. So it's a lot of communication work, a lot of like creating a central source of truth where you can house all the critical like assets and documentation around the stuff too, so that when they do have a question, it's easily accessible for them too.
Awesome. So we're kind of coming down to the final stretch here. What has you most excited about the future at Ignition, say over the next 6 months to a year? What gets you really excited about the future of what you're working on right now?
I mean, I think that like a lot of what we're doing right now is all, you know, like infusing AI into the platform to help speed up a lot of the workflows that already exist in it. And I think the one that's got me most excited is the one that we actually just launched, which is, I think I was talking about it earlier, it's that ability to take a set of CRM data, integrate into it, and then we'll automatically use AI to extract the feature ideas that are blocking deals.
It's pretty
actually
wild.
Help like add that to the roadmap, quantify the impact of building it, and then when that thing gets built, like we go back and notify sales and we say, hey, you know, sales rep XYZ deals that you're responsible for just got unblocked because this feature shipped. I think that that's like incredibly powerful for closing both the feedback loop back to product on what should be getting built, so that you're actually building things based on real market need, and then helping close the loop back from product to sales to make sure that those things actually get distributed and you capture that upsell and cross-sell opportunity.
Yeah, it's kind of almost taking some of the friction of that communication between those two parts of the organization and automating it in some way that's a lot more meaningful than, you know, some of the other ways that you would follow up with that kind of information. So.
Yep, exactly.
Well, super cool. Well, Derek, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us a little bit about what you guys are doing over Ignition. I've had it's been exciting to stalk you since you guys were down here in San Diego at the Go-to-Market Alliance, and I first became aware of you and your company, and it was fun to do the research and to learn a little bit more about your background and what you guys are doing. So do you want to just plug real quickly for the listeners if they want to either get in touch with you or find out more information about what you guys are doing over Ignition? You want to just give people a little bit of roadmap of how they can get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, our website is haveignition.com. And if you want to get in touch, Derek at haveignition.com is the best way to reach out to me. I'm also on LinkedIn. I think it's / Derek Osgood 3. So would love for you to reach out, and always happy to share more.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, really appreciate you coming on. So for everybody watching at home, we normally go live Mondays, 1 o'clock West Coast. This was a special episode today. But thanks again for following along. Subscribe, listen, or share wherever you tune into these video podcasts. And we'll see you next Monday, okay? Thanks, Derek.
Thanks, Dylan. Thanks for having me.